On this week's edition of New York Now, New York's COVID-19 numbers reach levels not seen since the spring. And Governor Cuomo says it's going to get worse.
So the rates will all go up.
We'll have details and analysis on that and the latest election results with Jimmy Vielkind from the Wall Street Journal and Marina Villeneuve from the Associated Press. Then, this year's elections have some calling for changes at local boards of elections. Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone joins me to discuss that and party control over the state's courts. And later, it's been more than 2 months since schools reopened in New York. We'll speak with kids and experts about how it's going. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation.
We will pass a law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. New York has now entered a new phase of COVID, and it's getting worse. There are now more people hospitalized than we've seen since June, and the positivity rate jumped above 3% this week for the first time since May. And new rules are now in effect to curb the virus. Restaurants, bars, and gyms all have to close by 10 p.m., and private gatherings are capped at 10 people, even at home. And Governor Cuomo said this week he's expecting things to get worse before they get better.
So the rates will all go up. We expect the rates will continue to go up through the fall and into the winter. The long-term prognosis is get to a vaccine as quickly as possible.
And that's all happening while voters in New York continue to wait for the final results of this year's elections. Joining me in studio to talk is Marina Villeneuve from the Associated Press and Jimmy Vielkind from the Wall Street Journal. Thank you both so much.
Good to see you.
So let's talk about the virus first, because I feel like that is somehow overshadowing the election this week in New York, because we know New York went for Joe Biden. We have some close races in New York, obviously, but the uptick of the virus is insane. With 3% for the first time since May, hospitalizations are at their highest since June. Marina, tell me how this compares to what we've seen in the spring. Are we looking at the same thing that we went through in March and April?
Well, thankfully, you know, we aren't seeing anywhere near the highs that we reached in April, where there were over 18,000 people in the hospital at one time, losing up to, 800 or more lives a day in hospitals alone and nursing homes alone. Since late August or September, there's just been a continued increase. And, in the last 11 days alone, we've seen more lives lost than we did in July or August of this year. So I think it's just a new phase, and a lot of rural communities that sort of might have hoped that this was going to be more of a densely populated downstate issue are really having to grapple with this for the first time.
That is one of the interesting parts of this to me, because I was talking in the spring to Pat Galvan. He's a Republican senator who is the highest ranking Republican on the Health Committee in the Senate, and I asked him at the time, these rural communities, if this comes here, is the hospital network prepared for that? Because usually we just see in these small areas, they have emergency rooms that fit 5 or 6 people. So I can't imagine with COVID-19 in these small areas, if they have to pack these emergency rooms, what's gonna happen? So I guess the question is, do we know why this is happening? And I'll go to you in a second, Jimmy, but Miranda, do we know why we're seeing this uptick right now?
Yeah, the past couple of days I've been traveling in Chemung County and particularly in Elmira, where they have continued to see this uptick. And there are just so many different reasons right now, and there is a lot of community spread in Southern Tier and Western New York. It's really hard to pinpoint, but there have been large gatherings at churches. There was a wedding in late August that spread to about 5 or 6 counties. We spoke last time about how SUNY had students had arrived in August and there wasn't the testing beforehand, outbreaks at prisons. It is at such a level right now that hospitals there are trying to prepare, and they do have surge plans to sort of deal with a crisis if it happens. But a big issue is staffing, and how are we gonna, if people are getting infected and having to quarantine. It's a big question about how we're gonna deal with this, because in the spring we were able to get volunteers from all over the country to come to New York.
This is scary for people in upstate New York, definitely. Jimmy, in the spring, something that helped a lot of people's fears was the governor with his daily briefings. How are we seeing him respond to this latest wave of COVID-19 compared to what we saw in March and April?
You know, it's been very interesting. The governor is loath to do a broad-based shutdown, which is what happened starting in March on, I think it was March 23rd, back in the spring. And instead, what they're doing is they're trying to do cluster focuses. So right now we know that the cities of Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse are in yellow zones that restricts gatherings, that it poses additional restrictions on dining. It requires additional testing for school personnel and school pupils. And I was talking the other day to one of the governor's top advisors on COVID, Gareth Rhodes, the deputy superintendent for the Department of Financial Services. He said that the hope is that when you put a yellow zone in place in these communities, that it has these restrictions, but it also has some shock value. And it also gets residents to say, hey, we've got to mask up. Hey, we've really got to cut these mass gatherings. We want the schools open. We don't want to have a broad-based lockdown. And the administration, including Governor Cuomo himself, have pointed out that there are many places around the state where these zone restrictions have been put in place, and they have subsequently been rolled back. So the governor on Thursday said that he hoped that he could avoid a broad-based shutdown. We'll have to see, though. The infection rates are rising everywhere. They're rising in New York, but the rates are still lagging behind other states. And I think it's important to note states that weren't hit nearly as hard by the COVID first wave in the spring as New York was. It was the hardest hit state. Our infections, our deaths really spiked quite sharply. And there's some thought that the way the virus went through the state, it sort of has made that this time around a little bit of an easier run, particularly in downstate areas.
Let's all hope. Speaking of downstate, let's switch to the election for a little bit. Jimmy, you had a great story this week looking at Trump voters in New York City and how there was an increase this year in the number of people who voted for the president in this year's elections compared to 2016. What happened here? Was it just increased turnout?
Well, increased turnout is part of that story, certainly. And this year was the first time in New York history where you had 9 days of early voting for a presidential election. It's the first time that you had essentially the ability for any New Yorker to vote by mail by requesting an absentee ballot. And so we did see greater participation, but we saw even after many unpopular and controversial policies advanced by the president, and despite his general unpopularity in the state, his base did go up in some unlikely areas. So I was able to analyze, with the help of the City of New York's Graduate Center, Center for Urban Research, some of the returns by assembly district. And the highest percentage gains that Donald Trump won in New York City were in the South Bronx. These are majority Latino districts, generally lower income areas, not necessarily parts of Trump's base, and normally considered to be Democratic bastions. And make no mistake, Joe Biden won handily in these areas, but the increase was, according to my reporting with my colleague Emma Tucker, an attraction by entrepreneurs, including some Latino small business owners, a great amount of organizing by evangelical Christians. We know the Reverend Ruben Diaz Sr. Has long tried to organize Latino and Hispanic ministers in the South Bronx to sort of be more of a conservative voting bloc. And also the effects, which were not just evident in the South Bronx, but on Long Island and in South Brooklyn and Staten Island, where the law and order messaging of the president, coupled with some of the criminal justice changes that were enacted over the past 2 years by New York State Democrats, gave a cocktail that motivated people to come out and support President Trump.
That's really interesting. Everybody can read it at the Wall Street Journal. Jimmy Vielkind from the Wall Street Journal, Marina Villeneuve from the Associated Press. Thank you both so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
There was some back and forth this week about the Trump administration's strategy for distributing a COVID-19 vaccine, with Governor Cuomo again criticizing the plan. It relies on private pharmacies to distribute the vaccine, but Cuomo also wants to set up state-operated vaccine sites. And he says he's now talking with other governors on how they can force the Trump administration to change its plan.
I've been talking to governors across the nation about that. How can we shape the Trump administration vaccine plan to fix it or stop it before it does damage?
That didn't sit well with the Trump administration. HHS Secretary Alex Azar slammed Cuomo in a TV interview Tuesday, saying the governor was playing politics with a vaccine.
First, his statements are unconscionable in terms of suggesting that politics should be a reason for delaying Americans' access to vaccine. The governor is in charge of distribution in his state. It'd be helpful if he would actually read his own plan and speak with Dr. Zucker to learn what it is.
A letter obtained by New York Now this week from a senior White House official also shows the governor recently turned down a one-on-one meeting with the Trump administration about the vaccine plan. So we'll see how that all shakes out when a vaccine is made available. Turning back now to news about the election, some are now calling for changes at local boards of elections after people spent hours in line to vote this year. Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone says political parties should have less control over who's hired to staff those agencies. We spoke this week about that and how politics can influence the state's courts. Take a look. County Executive Ballone, thanks so much for being here.
Great to be with you, Dan. Thanks.
Thank you. So you are calling for some overhauls to county boards of elections, which I think that we can decidedly say this year, the state election system is far from perfect. But you want to focus specifically on how the county boards of elections can sometimes be controlled by the major political parties in New York. So tell me what you mean by that and how does that work now, I guess?
I think what we're fundamentally talking about here is at the heart of our democracy, our elections. And at a national level, where you are seeing people across the country, tens of millions of people who are questioning whether the election was run properly and appropriately, that's a real danger to our democracy. And I think we have an obligation to do everything that we can to convey to the public that these elections are run as efficiently, effectively, and with complete integrity as much as possible. And what we saw in this past election was people waiting online for hours and hours at a time during early voting. You had, even during election day, long lines. I waited about an hour and a half, a little more than that, at my polling place. And those things should not happen. And they undermine people's faith in the process. So I think very important moving forward, we need to convey that these are professionally run agencies, that they're merit-based, and that, quite frankly, everyone has an opportunity to get a position at the Board of Elections that's qualified and is a patriotic citizen and wants to do a good job in something that's critical to our democracy.
So right now, just for context, I want you to explain what's happening now in these county boards of elections, because what we see all too often is some political parties may insert people into them as, I don't want to say a favor, but they're connected. That's how it is. And what you're saying is you want, your everyday person off the street to be able to apply for these jobs and work at these boards of elections instead of these people being handpicked by the parties.
Well, there's a strong argument for what is in the state constitution, which is that the parties each have a role to play in the Board of Elections, so that the two major parties, there are people who argue it the other way, but there is a strong argument to be made why that is important, that both parties have an equal say in what's happening at our local boards of elections. But what I'm talking about are the people who work at the Board of Elections. There's no reason that we have agencies all across our country, intelligence agencies, law enforcement agencies, where it doesn't matter what political party you're in. It's, are you there to do the job? Are you professional? Are you meeting certain qualifications and standards? And that's what we need to do when we're talking about our elections, because it is critical that people have full faith and confidence in our election system. And this election, I think, has demonstrated how important that really is.
So you talked a little bit earlier about waiting online for hours in early voting and on election day for some voters. Are we at a point where boards of elections across New York State just need more money to do all this? I know there was this big problem in Manhattan where there just weren't enough early voting sites. And in the next election cycles, we hopefully won't have as many people voting absentee. So we could see those lines get longer if there's the same voter turnout. Do boards of elections need more money?
Well, I think that is part of it. And it's also why it's important that people have confidence that these are professionally run agencies that are merit-based. As you're putting more resources and more tax dollars into agencies. The public needs to know that these agencies are being run efficiently and effectively. And think about what happened, Dan, here in this election. You had people waiting online for 4 hours or more in Suffolk County, which is really unconscionable. And then when they got into the polling place and were handed their ballot, they found more than half of the races on the ballot had already been pre-decided for them. The judicial races were effectively, the circle was already colored in for them because there was only one person on the ballot on multiple lines. And, you know, when there is so much focus on our democracy and making sure that it works, and I think everyone across the country, so many people around the state are concerned about that. Again, that issue, the fact that people didn't have a choice in more than half the races after waiting online for 4 hours, just is not sustainable. We need reform. We need to change this.
So this conversation about party control, partisan control in counties also trickles down to judgeships. And we know all too well in New York State that political parties often handpick candidates for a judge so they don't have any competition. It kind of takes the opportunity away from voters. You want to see that changed. And this is a very controversial conversation in the legal community, maybe not for everyday voters, but it's very important because this is an entire branch of government we're talking about. Tell me what kind of changes you'd like to see in selecting judges in New York State.
Well, that's exactly right, Dan. This is our third branch of government, and it is vitally important. You know, we dealt with a lot of corruption issues here in this county. We've talked about that, where we had a district attorney who was indicted for abuse of power. You had corruption that was disproportionately impacting communities of color, particularly black males, at the highest level of law enforcement under District Attorney Tom Spoda. And what is a check on that kind of corruption, that kind of abuse of power? It is an independent judiciary. And when the judiciary is selected in the exact same political process that the district attorney is selected in, and you have a lot of those issues, that becomes a problem. The judiciary at the state level deals with 95% of the cases that exist in our country. And it's a lot of kitchen book table issues. It's people going to surrogates court to deal with estates when there's been a death in the family, family court issues, businesses, small businesses that have some sort of dispute. They need to know with 100% confidence that they have an independent judiciary. We have some fine judges out there, but the system currently, the way we select when voters have no choice, is not working, and it needs to be reformed.
So it's obviously, as I said, a very controversial conversation for people in the legal community. I'm wondering what you think about the legislature's action on this, because it would obviously take some action from the legislature to decide how judges are going to be selected. Do you think that we see some movement in a legislature that's full of attorneys?
Well, yes, and I'm an attorney as well, although my wife jokes that I'm a fake attorney. She says I've never made any money from being an attorney. That's very important. I think, again, we do have leadership that understands the importance of these democracy issues, reforming and making sure that people have full trust and faith in the democracy. So I think we are seeing movement on that issue. Judicial selection reform is not something that people have talked about a lot, but if you really want to do criminal justice reform, if you want to create full equity in our system here, you cannot do it without making sure that you have a judicial selection process that is transparent, out in the open, that is intended to bring the best and the brightest into the system, and not one that is done in the shadows, in the back rooms. That can't happen anymore moving forward. There is too much at stake with respect to our democracy.
Well, as we were talking before, it's kind of a pet issue for me, so it's something that I am going to be keeping my eye on in the coming months, especially when the legislature comes back and maybe they start having those conversations about the boards of elections and the judiciary. So we'll be back on this topic sometime soon. Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone, thanks so much.
Thanks, Dan. Good to be with you.
And now a shift away from politics. Schools in New York have adapted to a new way of teaching that's never been done, with social distancing, masks, and a lot of technology. Some students are going to school in person, while others are learning entirely from home over the internet. And this could have long-term impacts on those kids. Producer Nicole Van Slyke spoke with a few of them about how it's going.
Yeah, I'm a hybrid student, so I go in one day and I'm home the next day. We sort of have a system of A and B day. I'm a B day student, so I go in on B days and I'm home on A days.
I'm doing remote learning because I am pretty scared of like the virus and like my family getting it.
It's a lot different. Like when we all go to school, there's dots on the sidewalk and we all have to stay 6 feet apart. All our desks are 6 feet apart and all our teachers have to wear masks.
This pandemic has been really difficult on the college age kids and the high school kids approaching applying for college. There was a great effort by SUNY recently to do an extensive mental health outreach for the kids at the SUNY campuses. Not only did they add telehealth, but they added a service to help students identify and refer themselves to a counselor within their own health insurance.
I got accustomed to it a little last year as quarantine went on during school, but as a senior, it's definitely different. Don't have any of the senior perks like leaving school during a free period or senior lounge, you can't even utilize that.
I don't like the online part, I don't learn as well. I'm more of an application-based student, so I like to do hands-on stuff and be present in the class.
Remote learning is pretty hard sometimes, but it's also pretty easy because like you can just like wake up and then go on your class right away.
I think this learning process is definitely worse for me. I think being in school is so much better. It's more active and you're there in person just taking in all the information. While you're at home, you're easily distracted, whether it's your phone or something going on in your house. There's a lot more distractions, so it's pretty hard to stay focused and get things done.
Now, there was a lot of really harsh predictions about how hard this would be on children. And for the most part, especially the younger kids, they're taking it very much in stride, which is what you would expect, that children are very resilient.
I don't really know how to explain it, but it's definitely funner than a normal school year because I like that the classes are smaller and I can focus better.
It's kind of like fun in a way that we all get to be in one room because like you get to like know people in your classroom better than having so many kids. Because I only have 11 kids in my class and then the other group only has 6 kids, so that's really nice. And I really like just like how more safe it is.
You know, the concerns about they wouldn't wear their masks, not an issue at all. They're really not concerned about the mask.
It has like a seam in the middle, so it like pops out so it's not stuck on my face, and it's really easy to breathe through, and I really like this mask. This is like the mask I wear at school every day.
I think the biggest thing is that they can't share toys or they can't touch their teammates or classmates. They have to play shadow tag instead of real tag, those types of things. But other than that, I think the concern is what we aren't seeing. Because most of the learning has gone to remote and most of the teachers don't know the kids. We don't use a looping system in most of the public schools. Looping is when a teacher stays with the same class of children for a number of years.
We call it virtual learning or remote learning because it's like you're on a remote watching. This year I'm in second, but right now, and this year he is in kindergarten in Loudonville. He's having a few problems and he's doing trouble. Like not listening, doesn't do the right things that the teacher says, complaining.
My school takes longer than him. I have 18 more minutes than him.
The United Hospital Fund recently did a report, and there are long-term implications about the learning loss that will happen if we can't get back to face-to-face learning. And that is an estimate that $8.5 billion in income could be lost to this generation of students because of learning loss, because they can't achieve the level of learning through remote and virtual learning that they would have if they were in face-to-face settings. I want to emphasize that school-based mental health and school-based health clinics are still operating. So even though the kids may not be physically going to the school building, if they want to speak with mental health or health professionals, professional, those options, if they were in their school building, are still available. You know, we feel that those services could be the first line in trying to, if a parent is noticing sleep changes or frustration, some kids can take that in stride and there's no issue, but if you start to notice that there's frustration with the varying schedule, that might be a good reason to request a mental health screening. We encourage parents, if you want that type of screening, contact your school-based health center or your school-based mental health center.
Don't overthink stuff, because like it will get better like soon.
I just say to be optimistic, it is what it is, and just to enjoy it.
Just remember that it's okay, you're staying safe, and it's for a good reason.
It's also possible that as COVID gets worse, schools could close again. We're watching that and more with daily coverage on our website. That's at nynow.org. And follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We're at nynow_PBS. But until then, thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.
And by the Dominic Ferrioli Foundation.